Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Kara.
Hello. My name is Kara and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not good with microphones. Thank you. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. My sobriety date is December 21st, 2014. I recently acquired a home group at St. Isidore's. It meets on Thursday nights at 8:30 in Quakertown. For like the past year, I'd say year and a half, I did not have a home group. It was kind of just doing my own thing, I guess you would say. So I do have a home group now, which is good. It's been a rough year for me. So like I hate speaking. I feel like you have to get up here and tell everyone like, oh, like everything is so good. It's so great. It's like 60 minutes and you just got to fill those 60 minutes with, you know, my life is so wonderful and my life is wonderful, you know, and a lot of that has to do with AA and the 12 steps, but it's been a really hard year. So, one thing I've learned to do is be authentic and genuine, and that's something I learned here, you know, in these rooms. So, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to tell you, like, what it was like, how I got here, you know, what the 12 steps did for me. So, the first year that I came to AA, I could not get it. I could not stay sober. I went through the steps, I don't know, maybe like every 3 months, just could not get it. I don't know what it was. Like I would switch sponsors. I would, you know, I would try everything people told me. I just, for the life of me, could not stay sober. And then eventually one day I did get it. So I think if you're like floundering around and you can't get it, don't give up. I think that's important. I was always an alcoholic as a child. I grew up, I had two older sisters, a younger brother. I didn't have a great upbringing. I didn't have a terrible one. But, you know, I went to Catholic school. I had a good education. And we would have, like, these huge family parties. And there was always alcohol. I was, like, always the little kid, like, getting drunk, like the five-year-old, getting smashed. And, like, I knew it probably wasn't normal. But, like, I can remember being at this wedding. And my one cousin was like, why are you doing that? Like, why are you getting drunk? Like, I didn't know. Like, I just really liked the effect that alcohol produced. So from a young age, like, anytime I could get my hands on alcohol, I did. And I would drink to excess. And the book talks about that, you know, the two questions. When you drink, can you just have one? And can you stay stopped when you want to stop? And, like, for me, I couldn't do either. So when I was 18 years old, I had an overdose. And, like, I knew back then, like, there were certain things I should not do, I should not touch, I should not engage in. So I can remember, like, I had this Roman Catholic upbringing, and I can remember being like, okay, God, like, take me out of this town, this crappy town. Like, there was this scholarship I applied for at Longwood Gardens. I was like, yeah, just take me out of this setting, and, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. Like, things are going to get different for me. So I went away. I lived in Kennett Square, and I did have a spiritual experience out there. Like, I went to this little church. It was weird. It was cult-like. And I was even able to quit drinking for like 6 months, but never permanently. Like, I was never able to permanently quit drinking until I came here, until I worked the steps. Like, I was always searching for something. You know, I would try yoga. I would be a vegan for a little bit. Like, I mean, I went through every phase you could ever imagine as a young adult, looking, searching, seeking for something, but I didn't know what. You know, I tried all different religious stuff, you know, and I thought I knew a lot. When I came into these rooms, I thought I knew a lot about God. I thought I knew a lot about spirituality. I was so well-versed in this, that, and the other. And my friend, I had a friend in AA, and I was like, yeah, I just can't get it, and I can't stay sober. And he was like, yo, he's like, are you willing to, like, be open to the idea that you know nothing about God? And I was, like, so beaten down. And I was like, yeah, I'm willing. And he's like, are you willing? I'm going to mail you a book. He's like, are you willing to do this spiritual study guide with me for 365 days? And I was like, yeah. And And I did it with an open mind and an open heart, and I worked the steps again, 100%. And I didn't leave anything out of my fifth step, you know, and, like, eventually I was able to get it. But I'm going to back up a little bit, because that was a lot for you guys at once. So, like, I knew I was powerless. Like, I knew that. I always knew that. I had a daughter, and, like, I would be so embarrassed to drag her into, like, all the liquor stores, all the beer stores. So I'd, like, switch it up, you know. And, like, I always had this, like, religious thing, you know. And I could remember one day being like, you know, God, like, I know I have a problem with drinking, but, like, I can't stop. And I can remember praying about it. Like, help me to stop. I couldn't stop, and I didn't get it, you know. Because, like, God's so powerful, like, why can't I stop? Like, I believe in God, I can't stop. So, and later on, like, yeah, my life's unmanageable. My life was clearly unmanageable. You know, like, I couldn't drive my car for 4 years. I'm a nurse, like, I just got off my, I had a 3-year probationary nursing license. You know, like, my daughter, I went to see her for 5 years in an institution where I was wanded at the door. She, like, she doesn't even talk to me today. Spent $100,000 litigating. You know what I mean? Like, obviously my life was unmanageable externally. But if you look at the internal, like, the way I felt every day, like, I hated myself. I couldn't sit in a room in silence with myself. You know, I had no peace. That was the real unmanageability, was how I felt, not just the external stuff. You know, and so I started working with a sponsor, the one who helped me get sober. And you look at the second step, like, you know, God restoring me to sanity. Well, I don't know if I believed it or not, but she believed it, and that was enough for me. I can remember at one point, she was like, put a post-it on your mirror that says, God, please restore me to sanity, and read it every day, you know. And, you know, so that was enough for me. Like, I did believe in God. That wasn't much of a barrier for me. It is for some people. So she believed it. I saw other people got better. They were normal. Maybe I could be normal, you know? And, like, the same thing with the third step, making that decision. Like, I was down with God, you know? But, like, doing that on a daily basis, that can be hard. That can still be hard for me. Like, there are things that I want that aren't good for me. Not necessarily drugs or alcohol, but other things. Like, and the determination I've come to today is anything that I want that bad, like, I should never want anything so bad that I'm not willing to let go of it. You know what I mean? Whether it's a job, a relationship, a family member, like, I should never want anything so bad that it's going to, like, devastate me, destroy me, make me drink or use drugs. Nothing. Because nothing is mine. You know, like, my kids aren't mine. My family members are not mine. My job's not mine. My house isn't mine. It's all just stuff I'm borrowing from God. So, like, that's where I'm at with that. You know, like, yeah, it's all God's. You know, my evening is God's. I'm here. I don't want to be here, you know. I want to be at home in my pajamas, like, watching Netflix or I don't even know what. Something. Eating bacon pizza. No, it's good. But you guys see what I'm saying. That's where I'm at with that. The fourth step, like, people get so afraid to do that. Why? You know, you, like, put it all on paper. And I come from such a strong sponsorship family where, like, I have so much guidance on the fourth step. You know, like, I'm told detail by detail what to do. And that fourth column is so powerful when I actually look at, like, the part that I play in stuff, you know. I don't have to be the victim today. And, like, my sponsor used to always say, when you're in enough pain, you're going to be willing to do the work. And that's still true. Like, every year I go through, I do an inventory. You know, I just wrote a resentment inventory, like, 2 nights ago because I was in enough pain over something. Because once you get to, like, this place, you just, it bothers you so much when you feel bad anymore. You don't want to feel like that. So you write it out, you look at it, and when you see the part you play, it doesn't feel so bad anymore. You know, you don't have to be like, it's their fault, you know? Like, I mean, these past few weeks, I've been going through this, like, really narcissistic type of behavior. I was joking around with my one friend about someone else. And I was like, he's like, me. But it's me. Like, that's how I am. I am such a selfish person. Me. You know, that's like how we are as alcoholics. Me. Me. Yeah. Who cares about me? Like, let's just keep it moving. You know, like the only time I ever experience any spiritual growth is when I'm in pain. So thank God. You know, thank God that these things come along and level me every few weeks and crush my enormous head. You know, no one really cares how many push-ups I can do. No one cares how much my boots cost. No one cares about any of that crap. Me. You know, it's ridiculous. So, you know, the tools are right there for me. Like, outlined in this book, it's so simple. I love it. Write it out. I see where I'm wrong. I don't have to be the victim. So the fifth step. Like, I think that's kind of what tripped me up that first year. Like, I held stuff back. You know, we all think, like, we have this terrible stuff. We all have terrible stuff. So, like, I was really comfortable with my sponsor, and I remember we did the fifth step exactly as it said to. I took a full hour afterwards. Like, I felt like God revealed stuff to me. And I remember calling her like the next day, and I'm like, I think I left a few things out. Like, I took it real serious. And that's how you have to take it. Like, it's a matter of life or death. And I've been sober since I did the steps that way, you know? Like, with a real sense of urgency, importance, and just like very serious, leaving nothing out. You know, step 6 and 7, I think I really feel like I have not given them enough attention. You know, the past few days, everything I've gone through, you know, because I just went through this like breakup. So, my character defects and like asking God to remove them, like they feel glaring, you know. I feel like sometimes like we just skimp over step 6 and 7, but like it's real stuff that needs to be addressed. And like, I can't change on my own. I couldn't stop drinking on my own. I can't change on my own. Like, only God is powerful enough to do this. And that's the truth, because like, I've gone through a lot of stuff this year, and I almost get semi-offended when someone's like, are you okay? Are you going to drink? I'm like, what are they talking about? Am I going to drink? Like, no. But you know what? Like, I could drink. I could drink tomorrow. It happens to people all the time. Like, I'm just lucky because, like, the disease works. You have the mental obsession. You have the physical craving. You have the allergy. You know, and I'm fortunate enough that the promises have come true. And that, like, I'm repulsed at the thought of it, like they talk about in the book. But that could change. Like, it's all based on my spiritual condition. So, like, I only have so much leeway. Like, I can act like a narcissistic little jerk for so long before I probably will pick up a drink if I don't examine my own conduct and apologize and clean up my messes. Eventually, if I hurt people, if I continue to hurt people, and if I don't make it right, I am going to drink. Like, fact. It's a fact, probably. I'm lucky enough that I have people in my life today that tell me the truth. And they're like, hey, why don't you write some inventory? You'll probably get some clarity, you know? I didn't try for 4 years. Not once did I not have a ride to work. Not once did I not have a ride to Wilmington, Delaware, to see my daughter. I've always been taken care of, largely by the people in these rooms. I've always been told the truth, you know, whether I liked it or not. I've never seen anything like it, ever. I never thought that I would be able to live, like, without wanting to drink or use drugs. It's complete freedom, you know? And in the midst of, like, everything I've gone through, I've been able to laugh. Like, I have fun all the time. I'm a nurse, you know, and I work in drug and alcohol inpatient detox. And I have a blast. I really do. Like, literally, we're rolling around laughing. Granted, it's not what I always want to do. But, like, I dance. My heart is light. And it has been a shitty year. You know, like, I spent 6 years litigating, you know, trying to get custody back of my daughter. At least, like, outside of an institution. And I finally had this attorney down in Delaware. And she was a good woman. Like, a lot of them robbed me blind. But last year, she, like, wouldn't even take my money anymore. She was like, yo, it's over. We won't even go before the judge. Like, it's over. Like, year after year, we'd get, like, stopped up and, like, something would happen. And we couldn't go before the judge, or the judge would get switched, or he'd be injured, or, like, something crazy would happen every year. And, like, we'd be building this case, and she'd be like, next year. And then she'd be like, you got to go see all these psychologists. And then these psychologists would be like, I need a $3,000 retainer. And I knew. I'm like, oh, here we go. And then that psychologist would drop us. Dad would, like, bully him around, and, like, all this parental alienation was going on. And it just went on and on. And then last year, she's like, yo. And eventually, she's like, just send me a check for $500. And, like, no custody attorney ever wants $500. It's like $5,000. Like, she felt so bad for me. She's like, I've never seen such a horrible case in my life. She's like, what happened here? How did this get so out of hand? You know? And like, I had to surrender that last year. Like, that is not easy, you know? But I'm not going to pick up a drink over it. You know, I look at what I do have, and I have a beautiful 5-year-old boy, and I get to be a part of his life. And I get to be sober. I get to give him, like, a very bright future, you know? It's hard, and it hurts. And I'm telling you, like, I don't have to feel the pain of drinking ever again, but that doesn't mean I don't feel pain ever again. You know, like, I felt so much pain this year. You know what I mean? And, like, that just became real. Because for all these years, I'm thinking and hoping that it was going to change. But, it's, like, not changing. She wants nothing to do with me. Like, so the only thing I could do was, like, say, okay, I'm going to honor her wishes. I'm going to walk away. You know? And surrender that. Because she's God's, not mine. You know? And, like, that's not the only thing that happened. You know, my sister and I used to tear around like crazy. We're close in age, and like, we would just like party, and we would do so much stuff, and like, I always looked up to her so much. But she was in the hospital, it was like a year ago, and actually like a year and a half ago, and maybe a year ago, I'm losing track, but she was there for one thing, and then she was having these neurological problems, so they did a scan of her head, and they found a mass, and they biopsied it, and they were like, well, your family should come in, and blah, blah, blah. And we all came in, and they were like, well, you know, it's a glio, like a tumor, and we can't remove it, and it was just awful. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm not close with my family, but I really love my sister dearly. She's like the last person I'd want to see anything happen to. So when I was like out there using drugs, I was like 90 pounds, and I was so terrified of the world. Like, I slept in her bed for months. Like, she let me sleep in her bed. She has the kindest heart. So, you know, I'm not God. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, the prognosis for that type of tumor is poor. But I get to show up for her, you know, like this summer, she wanted to go see like this band, and I took her to the concert. Like, I get to do stuff. I get to be there. I get to be sober. I get to be present. Like, I get to be of service to her. And if she ever needed me, like if the time came, I would be there. I'd lose my job over it, as a matter of fact. I'd have no reservations about it, because I've learned the hard way that people always come first. Always. You know, I've learned so much. You know, at the end of the day, like, you know, I could sit up here and I could be like, oh, I came to AA and I have a good job and I bought a house. No one cares. You know what I mean? Who cares? Yeah, it's true. But like, I actually learned how to be a decent human being. You know? And that's the truth. because I never learned that somehow in life. Like, I was just, like, a really shitty person, I think. I was doing the best that I could, but, like, I was just trying to pull something over on everyone. I thought everyone was trying to do the same to me, and then I came here, and I saw, like, something was different. No one wanted anything from me. And it was just, like, it was just all God and all love and light. And I caught on to that. I tapped into that. And it's like, that is contagious. I don't care what anyone says. So, and that's one cool thing about my job. I love being a nurse because, like, no matter what I'm going through, I can, like, be having the worst shit going on. I show up at work. It's not about me, me, me. It's about you, 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 because you're in worse shape than me. Don't I love that I'm sick, right? You're hurting worse than me. Let me help you. You're in bad shape, bro. You're coming off a long bender. When did you sleep last? I have so much fun at work. They heat treat the clothes, so it takes them like 8 hours to get their clothes back. And sometimes, like, if they come in tweaking and they haven't slept in like 4 days, I'll be like, they'll be like, where are my clothes? And I'm like, they're bedazzling them. You'll get them in 4 days. So, I just have so much fun, though. But honestly, I love my job and I love what I do. And God's just opening up more opportunities for me. You know, I applied for like 15 jobs and I was like, and I haven't done this in a long time because I was coming off this long kick of me, me, me. But I was like, you know what, God, just like, where do you want me? Where can I be of greatest service? Because I want to get back into like medical nursing. And I got a call like the next day for like a perioperative float pool nurse. So I have an interview on Wednesday. I don't know if, like, that's where God wants me, because that's, like, you know, could just be a fluke, but I'm going to pray about it and just see what happens. But, you know, I'm fortunate. I am fortunate. I'm fortunate that I get to work as a nurse. I'm fortunate that I get to be a part of anyone in my family's life. I have another sister. She didn't talk to me for, like, 5 years. She just started talking to me, like, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. That's pretty cool. And it's all... it's all because of the program. It's because of God, you know. So, eighth step. Made my list. And the time when I really put all the effort into the steps, that time when I got sober, my amends, I tried to make it, like, even the hardest of amends. You know, I reached out. I really humbled myself. And I think that was part of it, too. Like, the first few times around, I was like, oh, I'll do the easy ones. But, I had been part of an affair in my early 20s, and I remember I reached out to the wife. And that was, I mean, she was like enemy of the state number one, you know. And I remember I reached out to her, like, that was a really hard one for me. But literally, I did everything that I thought I needed to do that time around. A lot of people did not want my amends. A lot of people didn't want to hear them. Some people I couldn't find, you know. Yeah, but I did the absolute best that I could with that, and you know, prayer and meditation, seeking God through prayer and meditation. I used to have a really good routine for that. That has been lacking. That I could do better. I used to actually every night I would email the questions from the book to a group of people. And, like, they would be completely looped into what was going on in my life. Like, even with calling people, you know, and talking about, like, selfishness, dishonesty, fear, resentment, all of that. Like, the first few years, I was very keen on doing that, you know. But then it's like, I got so lax. I don't know what had happened. I guess after, like, 3 years, I was like, I'm good. I got this. Me, me, me. Me, me, me's got it. But, you know, I think that's when you have to be, for me, when I'm doing good, when everything's really good, and I'm renewing my passport, you know, that's when I'm in the most danger, I think. It's when things are bad. That's when I'm close to God. That's when I'm hurting, and that's when I'm like, okay, God, I need you more, you know. But when I'm good, like, that's when I have to be careful. And that's why, you know, I'm glad that I'm like, getting involved with a home group. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I should be doing. What right do I have to come in here and take from you guys and, like, offer nothing back? literally nothing, you know? I mean, all the time that people spent with me, all those times I had to go through the steps. And probably how many people were like, she's never going to get it. You know that person you're always like, they're never going to get it? That was probably me. But, yeah, I mean, literally, I have everything I could ever need. You know, I have some regrets. The big book talks about how you will have no regrets. I feel like I have a few, but, I mean, that's life, you know? All in all, like, I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy even when I'm sad, you know? I'm figuring out who I am and what I like. Like, most of my life, I didn't know that. I didn't know who I was. You know, like, you know, I play classical guitar. I like the contra dance. You know, all this stuff I would have been too afraid to do because I would have been like, what if I'm not good at it? Or what if someone else is judging me? Or, like, even, like, taking these new jobs, these new positions. You know, it's like fear. I was always so fear and ego-driven. You know? But, like, the program helps me. It helps me to see, like, my fears aren't even real. Who cares what anyone else thinks? You know? Life is so short. Like, today is the only day I get to live today. There's only one of today. You know? So. Should I say 8:30?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm really, that's really... Should I keep going?
Yeah, half an hour. You can
okay. I didn't pace myself very well. Do you have someone else you could call?
Yeah.
I'm like out.
No.
Oh, thanks, Mikey.